Chapter 64, David, a Fugitive. This chapter is based on 1 Samuel 18 to chapter 22.
After the slaying of Goliath, Saul kept David with him, and would not permit him to return to his father's house. And it came to pass that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Jonathan and David made a covenant to be united as brethren, and the king's son stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David, and his garments, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. David was entrusted with important responsibilities, yet he preserved his modesty, and won the affection of the people as well as of the royal household. David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war. David was prudent and faithful, and it was evident that the blessing of God was with him. Saul at times realized his own unfitness for the government of Israel, and he felt that the kingdom would be more secure if there could be connected with him one who received instruction from the Lord. Saul hoped also that his connection with David would be a safeguard to himself. Since David was favored and shielded by the Lord, his presence might be a protection to Saul when he went out with him to war. It was the providence of God that had connected David with Saul. David's position at court would give him a knowledge of affairs in preparation for his future greatness. It would enable him to gain the confidence of the nation. The vicissitudes and hardships which befell him through the enmity of Saul would lead him to feel his dependence upon God and to put his whole trust in him. And the friendship of Jonathan for David was also of God's providence to preserve the life of the future ruler of Israel. In all these things, God was working out his gracious purposes, both for David and for the people of Israel. Saul, however, did not long remain friendly to David. When Saul and David were returning from battle with the Philistines, the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. One company sang, "Saul has slain his thousands," while another company took up the strain and responded, "And David his 10,000s." The demon of jealousy entered the heart of the king. He was angry because David was exalted above himself in the song of the women of Israel. In place of subduing these envious feelings, he displayed the weakness of his character and exclaimed, "They have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom?" One great defect in the character of Saul was his love of approbation. This trait had had a controlling influence over his actions and thoughts. Everything was marked by his desire for praise and self-exaltation. His standard of right and wrong was the low standard of popular applause. No man is safe who lives that he may please men and does not seek first for the approbation of God. It was the ambition of Saul to be first in the estimation of men, and when this song of praise was sung, a settled conviction entered the mind of the king that David would obtain the hearts of the people and reign in his stead. Saul opened his heart to the spirit of jealousy by which his soul was poisoned. Notwithstanding the lessons which he had received from the prophet Samuel, instructing him that God would accomplish whatsoever he chose, and that no one could hinder it, the king made it evident that he had no true knowledge of the plans or power of God. The monarch of Israel was opposing his will to the will of the Infinite One. Saul had not learned, while ruling the kingdom of Israel, that he should rule his own spirit. He allowed his impulses to control his judgment until he was plunged into a fury of passion. He had paroxysms of rage when he was ready to take the life of any who dared oppose his will. From this frenzy he would pass into a state of despondency and self-contempt, and remorse would take possession of his soul. He loved to hear David play upon his harp, and the evil spirit seemed to be charmed away for the time. But one day, when the youth was ministering before him and bringing sweet music from his instrument, accompanying his voice as he sang the praises of God, Saul suddenly threw his spear at the musician for the purpose of putting an end to his life. David was preserved by the interposition of God, and without injury fled from the rage of the maddened king. As Saul's hatred of David increased, he became more and more watchful to find an opportunity to take his life. But none of his plans against the anointed of the Lord were successful. Saul gave himself up to the control of the wicked spirit that ruled over him. while David trusted in him who is mighty in counsel and strong to deliver. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10. And David's prayer was continually directed to God that he might walk before him in a perfect way. Desiring to be freed from the presence of his rival, the king removed him from him and made him his captain over 1,000. But all Israel and Judah loved David. The people were not slow to see that David was a competent person, and that the affairs entrusted to his hands were managed with wisdom and skill. The counsels of the young man were of a wise and discreet character, and proved to be safe to follow, while the judgment of Saul was at times unreliable, and his decisions were not wise. Though Saul was ever on the alert for an opportunity to destroy David, he stood in fear of him, since it was evident that the Lord was with him. David's blameless character aroused the wrath of the king. He deemed that the very life and presence of David cast a reproach upon him, since by contrast it presented his own character to disadvantage. It was envy that made Saul miserable and put the humble subject of his throne in jeopardy. What untold mischief has this evil trait of character worked in the world? The same enmity existed in the heart of Saul that stirred the heart of Cain against his brother Abel, because Abel's works were righteous, and God honored him, and his own works were evil, and the Lord could not bless him. Envy is the offspring of pride, and if it is entertained in the heart, it will lead to hatred and eventually to revenge and murder. Satan displayed his own character in exciting the fury of Saul against him who had never done him harm. The king kept a strict watch upon David, hoping to find some occasion of indiscretion or rashness that might serve as an excuse to bring him into disgrace. He felt that he could not be satisfied until he could take the young man's life and still be justified before the nation for his evil act. He laid a snare for the feet of David, urging him to conduct the war against the Philistines with still greater vigor and promising, as a reward of his valor, an alliance with the eldest daughter of the royal house. To this proposal, David's modest answer was, "Who am I, and what is my life, or my father's family in Israel, that I should be son-in-law to the king?" The monarch manifested his insincerity by wedding the princess to another. An attachment for David on the part of Michal, Saul's youngest daughter, afforded the king another opportunity to plot against his rival. Michal's hand was offered the young man on condition that evidence should be given of the defeat and slaughter of a specified number of their national foes. Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines, but God shielded his servant. David returned a victor from the battle to become the king's son-in-law. Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him, and the monarch, enraged, saw that his plots had resulted in the elevation of him whom he sought to destroy. He was still more assured that this was the man whom the Lord had said was better than he, and who should reign on the throne of Israel in his place. Throwing off all disguise, he issued a command to Jonathan and to the officers of the court to take the life of the one he hated. Jonathan revealed the king's intention to David and bade him conceal himself while he would plead with his father to spare the life of the deliverer of Israel. He presented before the king what David had done to preserve the honor and even the life of the nation, and what terrible guilt would rest upon the murderer of one whom God had used to scatter their enemies. The conscience of the king was touched, and his heart was softened. And Saul sware, "As the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain." David was brought to Saul, and he ministered in his presence as he had done in the past. Again, war was declared between the Israelites and the Philistines, and David led the army against their enemies. A great victory was gained by the Hebrews, and the people of the realm praised his wisdom and heroism. This served to stir up the former bitterness of Saul against him. While the young man was playing before the king, filling the palace with sweet harmony, Saul's passion overcame him, and he hurled a javelin at David, thinking to pin the musician to the wall. But the angel of the Lord turned aside the deadly weapon. David escaped and fled to his own house. Saul sent spies that they might take him, as he should come out in the morning, and put an end to his life. Michal informed David of the purpose of her father. She urged him to flee for his life and let him down from the window, thus enabling him to make his escape. He fled to Samuel at Ramah, and the prophet, fearless of the king's displeasure, welcomed the fugitive. The home of Samuel was a peaceful place in contrast with the royal palace. It was here, amid the hills, that the honored servant of the Lord continued his work. A company of seers was with him, and they studied closely the will of God and listened reverently to the words of instruction that fell from the lips of Samuel. Precious were the lessons that David learned from the teacher of Israel. David believed that the troops of Saul would not be ordered to invade this sacred place, but no place seemed to be sacred to the darkened mind of the desperate king. David's connection with Samuel aroused the jealousy of the king, lest he who was revered as a prophet of God throughout all Israel should lend his influence to the advancement of Saul's rival. When the king learned where David was, he sent officers to bring him to Gibeah, where he intended to carry out his murderous design. The messengers went on their way, intent upon taking David's life, but one greater than Saul controlled them. They were met by unseen angels, as was Balaam when he was on his way to curse Israel. They began to utter prophetic sayings of what would occur in the future and proclaimed the glory and majesty of Jehovah. Thus God overruled the wrath of man and manifested his power to restrain evil while he walled in his servant by a guard of angels. The tidings reached Saul as he eagerly waited to have David in his power. But instead of feeling the rebuke of God, he was still more exasperated and sent other messengers. These also were overpowered by the Spirit of God and united with the first in prophesying. The third embassy was sent by the king, but when they came into the company of the prophets, the divine influence fell upon them also, and they prophesied. Saul then decided that he himself would go, for his fierce enmity had become uncontrollable. He was determined to wait for no further chance to kill David. As soon as he should come within reach of him, he intended with his own hand to slay him, whatever might be the consequences. But an angel of God met him on the way and controlled him. The Spirit of God held him in its power, and he went forward uttering prayers to God, interspersed with predictions and sacred melodies. He prophesied of the coming Messiah as the world's Redeemer. When he came to the prophet's home in Ramah, he laid aside the outer garments that betokened his rank, and all day and all night he lay before Samuel and his pupils under the influence of the divine Spirit. The people were drawn together to witness this strange scene, and the experience of the king was reported far and wide. Thus again, near the close of his reign, it became a proverb in Israel that Saul also was among the prophets. Again the persecutor was defeated in his purpose. He assured David that he was at peace with him, but David had little confidence in the king's repentance. He took this opportunity to escape, lest the mood of the king should change as formerly. His heart was wounded within him, and he longed to see his friend Jonathan once more. Conscious of his innocence, he sought the king's son and made a most touching appeal. "What have I done?" he asked. "What is mine iniquity? And what is my sin before thy father, that he seeketh my life?" Jonathan believed that his father had changed his purpose and no longer intended to take the life of David. And Jonathan said unto him, "God forbid, thou shalt not die. Behold, my father will do nothing, either great or small, but that he will show it me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." After the remarkable exhibition of the power of God, Jonathan could not believe that his father would still harm David, since this would be manifest rebellion against God. But David was not convinced. With intense earnestness, he declared to Jonathan, "As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death." At the time of the new moon, a sacred festival was celebrated in Israel. This festival recurred upon the day following the interview between David and Jonathan. At this feast, it was expected that both the young men would appear at the king's table. But David feared to be present, and it was arranged that he should visit his brothers in Bethlehem. On his return, he was to hide himself in a field not far from the banqueting hall for 3 days, absenting himself from the presence of the king. And Jonathan would note the effect upon Saul. If inquiry should be made as to the whereabouts of the son of Jesse, Jonathan was to say that he had gone home to attend the sacrifice offered by his father's household. If no angry demonstrations were made by the king, but he should answer, "It is well," then it would be safe for David to return to the court. But if he should become enraged at his absence, it would decide the matter of David's flight. On the first day of the feast, the king made no inquiry concerning the absence of David. But when his place was vacant the second day, he questioned, "Wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to meat, neither yesterday nor today?" And Jonathan answered Saul, "David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, 'Let me go, I pray thee, for our family hath a sacrifice in the city, and my brother, he hath commanded me to be there. And now, if I have found favor in thine eyes, let me get away, I pray thee, and see my brethren.' Therefore he cometh not unto the king's table." When Saul heard these words, his anger was ungovernable. He declared that as long as David lived, Jonathan could not come to the throne of Israel, and he demanded that David should be sent for immediately, that he might be put to death. Jonathan again made intercession for his friend, pleading, "Wherefore shall he be slain? For what hath he done?" This appeal to the king only made him more satanic in his fury, and the spear which he had intended for David he now hurled at his own son. The prince was grieved and indignant, and leaving the royal presence, he was no more a guest at the feast. His soul was bowed down with sorrow as he repaired at the appointed time to the spot where David was to learn the king's intentions toward him. Each fell upon the other's neck, and they wept bitterly. The dark passion of the king cast its shadow upon the life of the young men, and their grief was too intense for expression. Jonathan's last words fell upon the ear of David as they separated to pursue their different paths, "Go in peace, for as much as we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed forever.'" The king's son returned to Gibeah, and David hastened to reach Nob, a city but a few miles distant, and also belonging to the tribe of Benjamin. The tabernacle had been taken to this place from Shiloh, and here Ahimelech, the high priest, ministered. David knew not whether to flee for refuge except to the servant of God. The priest looked upon him with astonishment as he came in haste and apparently alone, with a countenance marked by anxiety and sorrow. He inquired what had brought him there. The young man was in constant fear of discovery, and in his extremity he resorted to deception. David told the priest that he had been sent by the king on a secret errand, one which required the utmost expedition. Here he manifested a want of faith in God, and his sin resulted in causing the death of the high priest. Had the facts been plainly stated, Ahimelech would have known what course to pursue to preserve his life. God requires that truthfulness shall mark his people, even in the greatest peril. David asked the priest for 5 loaves of bread. There was nothing but hallowed bread in the possession of the man of God, but David succeeded in removing his scruples and obtained the bread to satisfy his hunger. A new danger now presented itself. Doeg, the chief of Saul's herdsmen, who had professed the faith of the Hebrews, was now paying his vows in the place of worship. At sight of this man, David determined to make haste to secure another place of refuge, and to obtain some weapon with which to defend himself, if defense should become necessary. He asked Ahimelech for a sword, and was told that he had none except the sword of Goliath, which had been kept as a relic in the tabernacle. David replied, "There is none like that. Give it me." His courage revived as he grasped the sword that he had once used in destroying the champion of the Philistines. David fled to Achish, the king of Gath, for he felt that there was more safety in the midst of the enemies of his people than in the dominions of Saul. But it was reported to Achish that David was the man who had slain the Philistine champion years before. And now, he who had sought refuge with the foes of Israel found himself in great peril. But feigning madness, he deceived his enemies and thus made his escape. The first error of David was his distrust of God at Nob, and his second mistake was his deception before Achish. David had displayed noble traits of character, and his moral worth had won him favor with the people. But as trial came upon him, his faith was shaken, and human weakness appeared. He saw in every man a spy and a betrayer. In a great emergency, David had looked up to God with a steady eye of faith and had vanquished the Philistine giant. He believed in God. He went in his name. But as he had been hunted and persecuted, perplexity and distress had nearly hidden his heavenly Father from his sight. Yet this experience was serving to teach David wisdom, for it led him to realize his weakness and the necessity of constant dependence upon God. Oh, how precious is the sweet influence of the Spirit of God as it comes to depressed or despairing souls, encouraging the faint-hearted, strengthening the feeble, and imparting courage and help to the tired servants of the Lord. Oh, what a God is ours, who deals gently with the erring and manifests his patience and tenderness in adversity and when we are overwhelmed with some great sorrow. Every failure on the part of the children of God is due to their lack of faith. When shadows encompass the soul, when we want light and guidance, we must look up. There is light beyond the darkness. David ought not to have distrusted God for one moment. He had cause for trusting in him. He was the Lord's anointed, and in the midst of danger he had been protected by the angels of God. He had been armed with courage to do wonderful things, and if he had but removed his mind from the distressing situation in which he was placed and had thought of God's power and majesty, he would have been at peace even in the midst of the shadows of death. He could with confidence have repeated the promise of the Lord, "The mountain shall depart, and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed." Isaiah chapter 54, verse 10. Among the mountains of Judah, David sought refuge from the pursuit of Saul. He made good his escape to the cave of Adullam, a place that, with a small force, could be held against a large army. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. The family of David could not feel secure, knowing that at any time the unreasonable suspicions of Saul might be directed against them on account of their relation to David. They had now learned what was coming to be generally known in Israel, that God had chosen David as the future ruler of his people, and they believed that they would be safer with him, even though he was a fugitive in a lonely cave, than they could be while exposed to the insane madness of a jealous king. In the cave of Adullam, the family were united in sympathy and affection. The son of Jesse could make melody with voice and harp as he sang, "Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity." Psalm 133, verse 1. He had tasted the bitterness of distrust on the part of his own brothers, and the harmony that had taken the place of discord brought joy to the exile's heart. It was here that David composed the 57th Psalm. It was not long before David's company was joined by others who desired to escape the exactions of the king. There were many who had lost confidence in the ruler of Israel, for they could see that he was no longer guided by the Spirit of the Lord. And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented resorted to David, and he became a captain over them, and there were with him about 400 men. Here David had a little kingdom of his own, and in it order and discipline prevailed. But even in his retreat in the mountains, he was far from feeling secure, for he received continual evidence that the king had not relinquished his murderous purpose. He found a refuge for his parents with the king of Moab, and then, at a warning of danger from a prophet of the Lord, he fled from his hiding place to the forest of Herith. The experience through which David was passing was not unnecessary or fruitless. God was giving him a course of discipline to fit him to become a wise general, as well as a just and merciful king. With his band of fugitives, he was gaining a preparation to take up the work that Saul, because of his murderous passion and blind indiscretion, was becoming wholly unfitted to do. Men cannot depart from the counsel of God and still retain that calmness and wisdom which will enable them to act with justice and discretion. There is no insanity so dreadful, so hopeless, as that of following human wisdom, unguided by the wisdom of God. Saul had been preparing to ensnare and capture David in the cave of Adullam, and when it was discovered that David had left this place of refuge, the king was greatly enraged. The flight of David was a mystery to Saul. He could account for it only by the belief that there had been traitors in his camp, who had informed the son of Jesse of his proximity and design. He affirmed to his counselors that a conspiracy had been formed against him, and with the offer of rich gifts and positions of honor, he bribed them to reveal who among his people had befriended David. Doeg, the Edomite, turned informer. Moved by ambition and avarice and by hatred of the priest, who had reproved his sins, Doeg reported David's visit to Ahimelech, representing the matter in such a light as to kindle Saul's anger against the man of God. The words of that mischievous tongue, set on fire of hell, stirred up the worst passions in Saul's heart. Maddened with rage, he declared that the whole family of the priest should perish, and the terrible decree was executed. Not only Ahimelech, but the members of his father's house, 45 persons that did wear a linen ephod, were slain at the king's command by the murderous hand of Doeg. And Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and sucklings, and oxen and asses and sheep. This is what Saul could do under the control of Satan. When God had said that the iniquity of the Amalekites was full, and had commanded him to destroy them utterly, he thought himself too compassionate to execute the divine sentence, and he spared that which was devoted to destruction. But now, without a command from God, under the guidance of Satan, he could slay the priests of the Lord and bring ruin upon the inhabitants of Nob. Such is the perversity of the human heart that has refused the guidance of God. This deed filled all Israel with horror. It was a king whom they had chosen that had committed this outrage, and he had only done after the manner of the kings of other nations that feared not God. The ark was with them, but the priests of whom they had inquired were slain with the sword. What would come next?